It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, and with me, as always, to discuss another NFL draft prospect profile is my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. What's going on, Adam? Are you ready to talk some Amon-Ra St. Brown?
I am. This is going to be an interesting pod with him because I think we differ on him a little bit. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I'm doing good, man. It's Friday. I got bowling tonight. I've been in a slump. I gotta break out of it. So Friday nights are always fun for me. But yeah, like this is. It's April. Did you know that? It's April.
Look, the NFL draft is really quickly sneaking up. And, I mean, look, I know bowling is a huge thing for you. And talking about elite athletes, we're going to get into Amon-Ra and kind of where you and I differ. But before we kind of get this kicked off, got to get up in here, got to mention Collectible again. This is a beautiful website. It lets you buy and sell real equity shares in rare and exciting sports goods. So sports cards, memorabilia. I am on the website right now. They have a Wilt Chamberlain Fleer rookie card that is going to IPO on April 4th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Woo! This thing is beautiful, man. You got to get in on this action right now. Sign up with the promo code FTN. With a chance to win limited edition Topps Project 70 cards signed by DJ Ski and over $10,000 of sports card prizes. So visit collectible.com/FTN for all the details. So where we differ is going to be interesting on Amon-Ra, Adam, because I think we don't hate the guy, and we're not throwing shade here, but I think there are some differences in how we both have looked at him as a prospect. So just kind of getting into it, man. Five-star prospect per 24/7 Sports entering the collegiate level. His father, and if you haven't seen these pictures out on social media, oh my lord, man. His father, John Brown, was a two-time Mr. Universe. I mean, that dude was built. His brother, we know, Equanimeous St. Brown, plays for the Packers. It's all in the bloodline. It's all in the family tree. His brother, Osiris St. Brown, is an underclassman at Stanford. So football is in the gene pool. So the guy, you love to see that in that type of physical acumen and all of these different things in families. And you see that kind of come out in his strengths, and we'll get to that later. But looking at his production and just where he stands as a prospect, 5'11", 197. Now, he did not do a whole lot of amazing things at his pro day. Ran a 4.61. Now, if you adjust that based off of, we know these are pro days, you're looking at somewhere in the range of a 4.66. So, we've talked about the 40s for wide receivers. Even threshold-wise, it's not fast, Adam. Now, his burst and speed scores are okay. Looking at what he did from a production standpoint, 60th percentile college dominator, 12th percentile yards per reception at 11.7. And where he stands as far as breakout age, he broke out really early at 18.9, so that's a 93rd percentile mark at USC, because in that first season at the age of 19, 750 receiving yards, 21% target share. Now, you didn't see him reach these immense heights as far as productivity. Yes, he got better as a 20-year-old in 2019. Over 1,000 yards, 20.6% target share, 6 receiving touchdowns. But that dipped yet again in this last season, only 6 games, 478 yards, 22% target share. What stands out to you just off the top, like looking at his entire profile, Adam?
Yeah, so like you said, that breakout age, pretty much 19 years old, that's a borderline elite breakout age. We definitely like that. And he was playing alongside Michael Pittman at USC, so like he wasn't the clear guy in that offense. Yeah, like if you look at his statistical profile over the 3 years in college, like it doesn't have that one season where it's like, whoa, you know, it doesn't have one of those huge seasons where he has 1,500 yards, 15 touchdowns. But for me, that just kind of goes kind of hand in hand with the type of player that Amon-Ra St. Brown is, and he's just kind of like a steady, really reliable player, was primarily used inside, played out wide a little bit more in 2020 when he was with Michael Pittman gone. But like he was, especially in 2019, like he was really a slot receiver, only played out wide 76 snaps that whole season. I think that's kind of what he's going to be at the NFL level, with some ability to play out wide. But for me, like, his numbers aren't going to stand out like massively, but at least he had a 20% target share or more in every season in college. And then in his final year, obviously last year, shortened season, six games, still had a over a 22% target share. So you look at this, the statistics, it's not going to like make you just, you know, jump out of your chair, but doesn't really mean that he can't produce as the guy in an offense, because when he was, it was, you know, the six, I would have liked to see him last year in, you know, a full, you know, 13 whatever game season.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at his usage like you're talking about, I mean, really in 2019, you saw his numbers really peak and look the best, because he was 88% out of the slot. Now, the rest of his collegiate career, one season, like, he was about 50-50, and this last one, he got pushed out wide. He was 70% out wide. So I think that looking at him as a prospect, that does kind of, and we're going to kind of get into his strengths here. Now, you're just looking at it from an analytical perspective, looking at his yards per route run, it's not pretty, man. It really isn't. I mean, 2018, he was fantastic amongst all wide receivers with 50 or more targets. He was 35th in yards per route run, and that's out of 286 guys. Now, you look at 2019 and 2020, it doesn't paint a pretty picture, Adam. I mean, 134th and 97th. Amongst all wide receivers in that metric, it's not great, dude. So, I mean, look, I'm not trying to throw shade before we kind of get into strengths and areas of improvement and stuff like that. But this doesn't speak of a wide receiver where you're wanting to, okay, it does this early career efficiency remain, or does he improve? On paper, you're looking at a guy that peaked early, and then it was kind of like, okay, well, where's the rest of it? You know, like, I know that he went over 1,000 yards in 2019, but if you look at the rest of his production profile, it's kind of saying the opposite, or it's kind of like, okay, well, 2019 feels like it's spit-shined a little bit more than it should be, but, I mean, I'm curious your thoughts before we kind of get into his strengths.
I just go back to wanting to see how he was in a full season last year, because we've seen glimpses of him at times as the, not just like the two with Michael Pittman, but the 1A at times, or the 1B at times. It was really dependent on the game, and I think he's not going to be certainly the prospect that Michael Pittman was coming out. Was he a second round pick, I think? Like, he's not going to go there, especially after his underwhelming pro day, but in case anybody hasn't gotten the vibe from this, I'm clearly a little bit higher on him than you. But we'll talk about some of the strengths.
You are. And I'm not trying to throw shade.
No, you can't love every prospect.
No, and I mean, we want to give the full range of outcomes for all these wide receivers. And it's good, I think, especially when you and I differ on these guys, because we look at different things, we analyze prospects in different manners. And so I think getting all different sides of the coin is extremely important. So why don't you kick us off here? Like, when you watched him on film, looked at him on paper, what stood out to you as far as strengths to Amon-Ra's game?
So a huge reason why I like him so much is because I've always gravitated towards the receivers that are just kind of route technicians, and that's Amon-Ra. He can run every route in the book. If you really look at it, he's very, very opposite as a player as Diami Brown, who we broke down earlier in the week. Like, they're very opposite players in a lot of ways. Amon-Ra has a full route tree. He was very productive, and I think a lot of reasons you didn't see his yards per out run through the roof or anything is he was really productive and really good on out routes, great footwork, everything like that. But I honestly thought, we talked about some of the concerns we had with Diami Brown, with his going up for the football, fighting for body control, stuff like that. Like, I think Amon-Ra is better at that than him, and despite not even being used as much as a vertical threat. Like, I think his body control is awesome. There were so many plays where they would throw fades to him in the corner of the end zone, occasional deep balls where he adjusted in midair really tremendously. So I love that with him. And obviously, he's not Kadarius Toney. He's not Rondell Moore. He's not these guys after the catch. But I think he's good. He's not going to run past you, obviously. But this is where me and you might differ. He's not an overly, like, incredibly physical player, but I think he is a player that when he does catch the football, he does, you know, bounce off some tackles, whereas he's not going to just run by players. But it helps when you can create separation if you're not going to run by players too, and he can definitely do that with his routes.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, like, I think that he's a polished prospect. I think that he is really good, like you're talking about, short, intermediate areas of the field. Where I'll push back a little bit as far as, like, his route tree is I don't think that he's going to be a guy, and I know I'm kind of jumping the gun here as far as areas of improvement. He's not going to be a guy for me that I think is going to win in the deep areas of the field. He is going to be a chain mover at the next level, a possession-type receiver. And like we're talking about in 2019, working out of the slot almost exclusively, I think that if you're high on him as a prospect and you're looking at the ceiling range of his outcomes and a team utilizing him in a system to the best of his abilities and his strengths, at least at this point, I think that utilizing him in a slot role and as a chain mover type is where he's going to succeed. Because you do see that ability. Like, when he gains separation, it's a quick first step. It's not... Like, for me, when I watched him, I didn't think that he was overly physical. Do I think that he is more physical than, like, somebody we're talking about, like Diami Brown? Yes. Do I think that... I think that his physical limitations show up on his film, but I think that his abilities as a tactician, and we're talking about this football bloodline, I think that he is a more polished prospect, and he is able to make good use of the physical attributes that he has and the traits that he has to the best of his ability. So I don't see him as a high ceiling prospect, but as far as a guy that can win in the short and intermediate and underneath, especially out of the slot, yeah, I definitely see that, because there's multiple times where it's either in the red zone and you see him scoring touchdowns based off of that first step and enough physicality to win at the catch point. But how he's gaining separation, yeah, I saw him win a lot on slants and a lot on out routes. Now, did they utilize him in screens at USC? Yes. Do I think that that was the best utilization of his skill set? No, because I didn't see him as an immensely explosive player, like, after the catch. Like, can he break a few tackles? Sure. Is he a player where I feel like that's exactly how you need to utilize him, like, in a Deebo Samuel role or a short area role and expect him to create after the catch? No. Is he going to be a trustworthy outlet in those short and intermediate areas of the field for a quarterback? Yes, I can definitely see that. But I don't think that his utilization was fantastic in how they deployed him at USC and asking him to try to create yards out of the catch for himself.
Yeah, and like we talked about it with ceilings and stuff, like if every single wide receiver prospect in this class, every single one hits their ceiling, he's not even going to be top five in terms of ceiling. We know that, like probably not even top seven. But where he differs is I think he just has a really high floor with how he plays, where a lot of these other players, you know, the Kadarius Tonys, a lot of these players who can win in a lot of versatile ways but aren't exactly the most polished, that he could have a much higher floor than these players and have a really long, successful career without ever being, you know, a top 10, 15 receiver in the NFL, which I think he kind of slides in for that being his ceiling is like a top, you know, 25 receiver in the NFL, which there's a lot of good receivers in the NFL. So being like the 25th best wide receiver in the NFL is nothing, you know, that's like Tyler Boyd territory. Tyler Boyd's a great player, you know what I mean? So I think that's where I definitely agree. Like his ceiling is way, way, way lower than a lot of these other prospects, which is why I would say most people in the industry or the draft industry or fantasy or whatever has him in that like wide receiver six at the ceiling range for Amon-Ra St. Brown, whereas like he's probably settling in wide receiver seven, wide receiver eight in most people's rookie receiver rankings.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with any of that. So let's kind of get into this, man. Areas that you think that he can improve, concerns that you have as far as his game and transitioning to the NFL?
So I don't like using this as a real weakness because it happens to everybody, but he had some bad drops, which happens. especially a couple of muff punts I saw, but like those are easily fixable. Like if we just you know, gave up on a player because of drops, and Davante Adams, you know, he's the guy I always bring up, but he had a lot of drop issues, and now he's the best receiver in the NFL. Well, it happens to a lot of players. So I did notice that. The explosiveness just really isn't there. And while that's not the end-all be-all, it definitely puts him behind the eight ball a little bit when you're comparing him to these other receivers. So those are the two ones that stand out the most to me. And he also didn't really – I didn't see him – like every single – almost every single play or whatever I saw from him, he was – facing really off coverage, like 5-6 yards off the line of scrimmage. He didn't really see a lot of press coverage, so I don't know how he's going to fare against press coverage in the NFL, because I didn't see him get really any exposure to that in the games and the film that I watched.
Yeah, and I think that kind of leads into exactly what I saw on film for him and where my concerns lie as far as what he's going to do at the NFL level. And we're talking about usage and things of that nature. I think that he needs to be used out of the slot and where he wins and stuff, because it showed up on his pro day, man. Like him, and I know we've talked about 40s and stuff like that. And I'm not expecting, like, you don't have to go out and run a freaking 4.3 for me to be high on you as a prospect. But that threshold of running in the 4.5s, especially when you're a guy that is not, he's not 6.5, Adam. Like, he's not 6'4". Like, he's not a guy that's immensely huge. He's freaking 5'11 and under 200 pounds. And he's running a 4.6. That's not great. When you're talking about, like, his transition to the NFL, his ceiling, and what he's going to do. Now, have there been other wide receivers that have gone on and had immensely productive careers and run in the 4.6s? Yeah, that's happened. Sure, that's exactly happened. But we're talking about utilization. And looking at how he projects to the NFL level, I worry about his strength at the catch point. Did I see him make some catches in traffic? Yes, I did. But I also saw him whiff. I saw him not come down with some catches that I felt like he probably should have or needed to. And we're looking at a guy who's not going to burn past people. So is he going to have to go over the middle and make these tougher contested catches? And sometimes, because all of these areas, even coming out of the slot, you're going against NFL slot corners, they're going to be faster. A lot of them are going to be faster than him, especially running a freaking 4.6. So he's going to have really solid hands catching these balls in traffic. And I saw inconsistencies there, as well as a guy that you're not going to ask him to win deep down the field. That's not something that I think he's going to do or he's going to be good at. So looking at a guy that I think that his physical limitations as far as speed and athleticism and stuff, I think, is going to cap his ceiling. And a lot of times, it gave me a lot of concerns about where he's going to be in the NFL. Like, if a team is going to line him up on the outside and expect him to win off press and to win not just in the short and intermediate areas, I think that he is going to struggle. And where he's going to go as far as team fits and stuff, I feel like we're seeing these physical limitations show up not only in his routes or usage. It shows up when he's blocking, dude. There's multiple times on film where he goes to block somebody and he gets blown out of his damn cleats. Like, I saw that multiple times in the run game, and I'm curious if you saw the same.
I did not. I'm pretty sure I know exactly what play you're talking about.
Oh, man. There's two or three different times where I watched him in 2019 and 2020. He goes to set a block and somebody just blew him out of his shoes. And I'm just like, oh man, I think I just saw his soul leave his body. That's not good. That's not good. So, I mean, there are concerns there, but kind of where we're getting into comps, and I'll kick us off here. That's where I think that the range of outcomes and understanding where these players could be or who they could be at the NFL level, I think that the best and highest range of his outcomes and what you're really hoping for, if you're really high on Amon-Ra St. Brown as a prospect, is you're hoping for Jarvis Landry early career usage, like in Miami. And yes, a lot of people had their jokes and they made fun of it. Jarvis Landry was immensely effective in short and intermediary areas of the field. He was great on slants, great on outs in Miami. Now, did we see him take another step and become a different and more nuanced wide receiver in Cleveland? Yes, you did. And does Jarvis Landry also run a 4.6? Yes, he does. Jarvis Landry has a freaking chip on his damn shoulder. That dude is mean when he gets after the catch and blocking and all these different types of things. I think that with Amon-Ra, if you're looking at the 2 or 5% outcome for him, you are hoping that he lands into a situation where he is going to be peppered with targets over the middle of the field. And that's really what he's going to do in the first year, maybe 2 years of his career. And is that going to cement him in a higher volume role in an offense? Could I also see him as a guy that falls to the 4th, 5th round, possibly, considering he didn't wow anybody at his damn pro day, man? So I think that his draft stock, I mean, right now we're going to talk about possible landing spots. I'm going to put him in that 3rd and 4th round range. But could I see him fall, considering where he could go and what he did at his pro day? Yes, I could see that happening. So, I mean, my comps for him land anywhere considering draft stock and his usage and role in the NFL. I could see Kendrick Bourne. I could see Sterling Shepard. I could also see Jarvis Landry. And yes, if you're looking at what type archetype am I looking at for all these wide receivers, guys that are in that 6-foot range, guys that are better in the slot, guys that are good route runners, but if you're going to ask him to win outside consistently and be a high-volume guy, especially on the outside, it's probably not great. Now, could he take that next step and be Jarvis Landry in Cleveland? Yes, but looking at him as a prospect right now and where he succeeds, that's a hard thing to envision for him, but I'm not going to say that it can't happen.
Right. I would agree that, like, the best case scenario for him was to be like a Jarvis Landry type player. My comp, and I don't know if it's just, I mean, let's be honest, it is for me being a Bills fan, but like after I watched him, I immediately saw Stevie Johnson with one difference. Stevie Johnson, way better against press coverage, way more physical player. Like Stevie Johnson wins a lot of the same ways that St. Brown does, right? Great. He had great body control, was quietly like the best route runner in the NFL when he was, you know, that 2010, I don't want to say the best definitively, but he was a top five route runner. Like he was a route technician. He had that stretch from 2010 to 2012 in Buffalo where he was fantastic. The difference is like that, those are the Ryan Fitzpatrick years in Buffalo where he just targeted Stevie at will because they didn't really have a ton of talent at receiver elsewhere. And Fitzpatrick always targets his number one receiver at a really high rate. So he had, you know, 141, 134, and 148 targets. Definitely not in his rookie year unless injuries happen. We're not going to see St. Brown get anywhere close to that type of volume. But I do think they win in similar ways. Really good route runners, not winning with speed. Like Stevie ran like a 4.6 40. Like that's slightly faster than St. Brown. And I will say the difference is Stevie didn't really play in the slot in Buffalo. He moved there a little bit, but he was like a 25% slot snap or slot mm-hmm. rate guy during his time in Buffalo. I just think he's way better against press coverage and out wide, which is the mm-hmm. difference. Like we saw Stevie win against Rasheen Mathis back in the day against Jacksonville. He was the only person Revis couldn't cover, apparently, back in his prime. Like he was legitimately good against some of the more physical. Richard Sherman, he had good games against. Like he was that dude against press coverage and against really good corners. I don't know if we're going to see that right away from St. Brown, but I think the way they win with their routes, how they get open, and their body control, like a lot of his clips, I went back and watched Stevie Johnson highlights, and it looked a lot like Amon-Ra St. Brown, and they're similar sizes. Stevie, during his time, was, I think, 6'1", 202. St. Brown is like 6 foot, 200, so very similar in terms of the profiles physically.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about. I think if you're going to look at what like him hitting this top 5% outcome for his career and role and things of that nature. One, I think he's going to have to get some things to break right for him. Two, we're talking about these comps and the high-end comps for him as a player. I think that he's going to have to get better on the outside for that to happen. And he's going to have to get more physical in both his routes, his releases, and the ability to win outside. And if he doesn't do that, I don't know if he's going to be able to hit that top 5% outcome. Because, like I'm talking about with Landry in Miami versus Landry in Cleveland are two immensely different players step that he took. Yeah, you tell me.
Adam Gase.
Hey, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. For as much as I crap on Adam Gase also pigeonholed him into a slot role, and he had high volume usage. If Landry would not have gotten that high volume usage at the very beginning of his career, could we say that Jarvis Landry still has the same career arc as he did? Like, if he didn't explode and sit here and get all of these targets in the first 2 years of his career, do you think that he would have floundered, or he wouldn't have hit this ceiling as far as, like, usage and opportunity and a team actually trading for him? I think you would have seen Jarvis Landry in a more Sterling Shepard-esque career arc. But am I wrong there, man?
I mean, they also didn't have anybody at receiver. I mean, 2015, what, they had Rishard Matthews as their number two. Devontae Parker, that was back when he didn't play games because he just couldn't. So they didn't have anybody, which helped. But, yeah, I mean, like, I think I do agree with you on Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, he has to become more versatile, especially out wide, if he's going to be able to hit his ceiling. Because there are players that we can comp him to. But, like, Jarvis Landry, despite, like, you say slot receiver in the NFL, and everybody thinks Jarvis Landry immediately. But, like, Jarvis Landry can win outside. He's been winning outside
since he arrived in Cleveland, man. Exactly. Like, he's been doing that, and he does it deep down the field. So it's not that, like, I don't know that Amon-Ra, like, we just haven't seen it on his film to know that he can do that yet. So it's hard to project him or to know that he's going to be able to hit this ceiling outcome based off the skills that he's flashed. But we've talked about strengths and areas of improvement. Where do you see him landing in the NFL draft, Adam?
So it obviously depends on what they do in the early rounds, because we definitely agree that Amon-Ra St. Brown will not be going in the first two rounds. But I could see he would fit really well with the Bears, I think, because apparently Anthony Miller, who's their slot receiver, is on the trade block. Like, if they moved on from him and then they brought in Amon-Ra St. Brown, and he can play primarily in the slot with Mooney on the outside and Robinson playing like 60-40, kind of in that Adam Thielen role in terms of slot and out wide, I think that would be a really good fit for him in terms of, like, putting him in a situation where he would be most comfortable playing. So, again, depending if they go receiver at, what, pick 20, or if they go receiver in the second round, that's a spot that definitely stood out to me right away is the Bears.
Yeah, and looking at a few different spots, and like I talked about, I'm pegging him going somewhere in the third round. So there's a handful of teams that I think that he could fit in. One being Miami at 82. If they're going to need somebody in the slot, because this is still a wide receiver core that needs somebody. And we're talking about separating in the short and intermediate areas. He could be a good weapon for Tua in that sense, in this offense. A few other places, I think Washington makes some sense at 83. Yes, they signed Adam Humphries. Yes, they have Curtis Samuel. Terry McLaurin and Curtis Samuel are going to operate on the outside. I think if you're looking at a guy that can sit here and garner targets and operate out of the slot, I think that could happen in Washington. Cleveland also makes some sense at 90 and 92 overall. And we're looking at, again, we're talking about, I mentioned Jarvis Landry's name like 15 times. You're looking at the perfect guy to tutor Amon-Ra St. Brown at the next level. Mm-hmm. There you go. The place that I really want to bring up, and I saved it for last, and I think that we're talking about, in the best case scenario, he could walk into a high volume role with a quarterback that only likes to throw to guys that get separation, because, dear God, don't ask him to throw into contested situations. The Detroit Lions at 72, with Perriman and Tyrell Williams on the outside, and you had Amon-Ra operating over the middle of the field, I think that's a really good fit. And we're talking about places where, could he walk into a high volume role? If everything broke right for him, Adam, in year one, that would be a spot where he could do that, man.
For fantasy, I love that spot. I think that would be almost best case scenario, not for, like, just because the landing spot is so good and it's the greatest offense, but obviously they're replacing a million targets with Marvin Jones, Kenny Galladay, and Danny Amendola, and they don't have that. Like you said, they brought in you know, Breshad Perriman, and they have Quintez Cephas, who's a downfield threat that has zero speed, and then they have Tyra Williams, who's a downfield threat. Like, they need a guy underneath, other than DeAndre Swift and T.J. Hockenson. So, and we know that team is going to be bad and chasing points a lot this season. Like, he could quietly have, like, 110 targets in that offense if he lands there in the third round or whatever.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about. If you're looking at ceiling outcomes and places where he can land and really take advantage of a target vacuum, like a place that is going to be able to utilize him, one, over the middle of the field, two, with the quarterback that likes to throw there and likes guys that get separation, you look at where this receiving core stands right now, I mean, he kind of hand and glove fits there, man. I mean, it would be a quiet, sneaky good spot for him to fit. If he goes in the third round, I think that you're going to see him. If you're already kind of doing best ball drafts right now over on Underdog, you're going to see his ADP kind of creep up. And he's a guy that I would have a lot of interest, especially at the end of my drafts right now. So you got to be heading there. Use the promo code FTN, and they will honor a money-back guarantee if you do not love Underdog in your first month. They will refund you up to $100. They've got NFL drafts live right now. Like, I am in the war room. I am drafting daily. We've got content coming out. Adam and I have already talked about stacks, early values. They have got MLB best ball. It's live, baby! Opening day has already happened. Get in on this action right now. Again, use that promo code FTN and start taking advantage of all these great ADP values. So Adam and I are going to be back discussing more NFL draft prospects and more best ball content next week. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.